The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
To the very last minute. Interesting story on CNN. I haven't read it yet, but I'm going to. Bats are not to blame for coronavirus. Humans are. Well, it's good to see that in print. Couldn't agree more. And there is a video that I have posted. Let me see where it is. It's in headlines, and it's also in that right-hand column featured story on coronavirus. Got a new David Dees art piece at the top of the home page. Just brilliant work. Thank you, David. And our other art piece below it, lots of pictures trying to reflect what's going on out there, which is occurring, of course, at a speed and a rate that is really unprecedented. Not since Fukushima have I seen anything like this. First video on the right-hand side in featured stories under the coronavirus heading. It says coronavirus must reading. Watch doctor talk about coronavirus genome showing it was bioengineered, how the economy is dying, and warns to prepare now for 18 to 20 months. It is a super SARS virus. I used to call it SARS 2.0, still do. You got to look at this video. It's about an hour long. But look at it and listen to this doctor. His name is Cottrell, C-O-T-T-R-E-L-L. He is really smart. This guy didn't make one misstep in the entire presentation. It's a Stefan Molyneux interview. But this Dr. Cottrell is absolutely first rate. And it's probably the most important hour video I have seen so far on this whole situation. Do take a look at it. It's, didn't I send it to you, Mr. Cooper?
Yeah, you did. I was going to look at it on Friday when our show is, but I see on your website today is only Thursday, and my name must be Yoichi Shimizatsu.
You did change your name after all, then.
Apparently. No, I don't even speak Japanese.
Well, we're lucky to have what we have. I've got this massive news load I've put together during the day, and it's going up shortly. That's just a delay. My webmaster is in Brazil. He's got the guests now. They'll be changing momentarily. Don't worry about it. It's your presence.
Don't worry.
People care
be
about.
Happy.
That's right. There's nothing to look at here. Just carry on. Yeah, as soon as we get that posted, and I've asked him twice to send, hold on a minute here. We've got some really great stuff to look at, but until
okay.
he puts it up there, hold on here.
That's okay. I'm winning my solitaire game here on my computer.
You're winning at solitaire?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's sheer luck, though. Not a lot of skill involved in solitaire.
They have a computer game version, too. You're playing it with real cards, I assume.
No, I'm playing it on the computer.
Oh, okay.
And I'm absolutely convinced it's programmed to where you can't win most of the time.
Really?
You get three aces, and then you get a deuce of the ace that hasn't showed up yet.
Yeah, I don't even remember how to play solitaire. Been too long. Too long. All right. Let's see. What did I do today? I went to the bank, and they told me that beginning Monday, they will be locking the door and allowing two people at a time to come into the lobby, which
wow.
is better than locking them permanently.
Yeah.
So that's the bank. Very light traffic. I think most of you listening have experienced the same thing.
Oh, I guess light traffic.
Hmm?
I guess light traffic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My supermarket, my market still is well-stocked. I haven't seen many masks, and it dawned on me last week, why? There aren't any. When you have nurses in Washington State being told by the CDC to get over it and wear bandanas, you know we've got problems.
Yeah.
Okay? We're going to lose a lot of doctors, Harry, and a lot of nurses and professional health care people, our first responders. They're going to be taken down. I'm not saying they're all going to die, but they're going to be taken out of the game. This is going to be bad. We're barely into this, and we're already virtually out of hospital rooms. We have no PPEs to speak of. We have doctors get one mask a day in Washington State, for example. I don't know how it is around the country, but some of you listening probably know. There aren't many supplies. There was some talk about going into the, quote, National Reserve, which is a joke. I think they have a million masks, which will probably last, a few days at the most. This is going to get to be pretty ugly. They're going to end up in a triage situation. They won't have beds. They certainly won't have ventilators. And let's say 10 people show up at the hospital in critical condition needing ventilation. They're going to have to make a decision who lives and who doesn't live. It's that simple. That's what's going to happen because we haven't been properly prepared for this. And that should have been done 15 years, 20 years ago. What's it cost to get prepared?
Too many people in this world, apparently.
Mike Pence's office, one of his aides, has coronavirus. Of course, neither Mike nor Donald will get it. Don't worry. National security, you know. So there we go. Now, you are going to attempt to put together a tour coming up this September, right?
Oh, yeah. We are still going forward full steam ahead because I think this whole virus, whatever you want to call it, pandemic, is going to be over shortly.
Yeah.
It's going to be over long before that. We've got people signed up already. Nobody is making noises like they're getting scared and want to pull out. We're going.
Good. Oh, you got a weird buzz in your phone there. That does it again. I want Todd to call you back.
Yeah, I don't hear it. It must be on your end.
No, it's on your end.
Okay, if you say so. How come I can't hear it?
Because when it buzzes, your voice disappears. That's the key. Okay. Now, Todd, go ahead and call him back. Harry, just hang up, and Todd will call you right back. Yeah. All right. When we get these links put up for the photos, I spent quite a bit of time today putting together one of the photo galleries, and that's, I'm looking forward to seeing all of them. Let's see. Still says Thursday up there. All right, come on, gang. All right, are you back? Not yet. Talking with Harry Cooper, sharkhunters.com. Okay. He's still not there. Oh, I just got an important email here. You there, Harry?
I'm here.
All right. Okay. So tell us about the coming tour this fall in September, and you're confident about that. That's good. And if you do sign up and it doesn't work out, you get your money right back. So
oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The last 2 weeks of September will be, this time we're changing. We normally go to southern Germany and Austria, which is fantastic, beautiful area, naturally Oktoberfest down there. But this year we've decided not to. We haven't been to North Germany since 2012, I think it is. So we're going there in September. We're going to Berlin for some days, visiting the historic sites around there. Also, we're going east to the town of Küstrin, which is on the eastern border or eastern shore of the Oder River, and that is known as the most frequently or most often devastated city on the planet. Every time anybody has a war, they destroy Küstrin. And after World War II, there was nothing left but basements again, and they decided they weren't going to rebuild. So it's a ghost town. The remains of a castle are there, fortress castle, small, not much left of that either. But what's famous about this, this is where Frederick the Great
was. Do you have a cold, Harry?
No, we have oak pollen here. The oak trees are in full bloom. My torch red Corvette is covered with yellow dust.
Why isn't it the garage?
Well, it would be in the garage if I had a garage.
Oh, it's those silly details. I get it.
Yeah, I know. It's in the carport. But even so.
So the torch red Corvette is now yellow snow.
Okay. Yeah, yep. Pretty much. So it's just a way of life here in Central Florida. We don't have palm trees and beaches and topless bikini bottom girls running around. We got race horses and we got oak trees up the wazoo. We got oak trees everywhere, and they're in full bloom right now. And boy, oh boy, what a mess. So anyhow, we're going, like I said, we'd be in Küstrin. And this is where the Red Army massed to cross the Oder River for their final push into Berlin, which is only 40 kilometers away. But back when Frederick the Great was a young man, he and one of his buddies, I think it should have been Frederick the Gay, because all things anyhow, him and his buddy decided they didn't want to be in the army anymore, so they deserted because they wanted to write poetry and play musical instruments. And, of course, they got caught. And the king, who was Frederick the Great's father, condemned them both to be beheaded. Well, the nobility went nuts. You can't behead the heir to the throne. So the king relented, and Frederick was not going to be beheaded, but his punishment was he had to sit there and watch while his friend was beheaded. This is also where...
Is that called recreation?
I guess it is. It beats getting your own head chopped off. This is where, in my opinion, the legend of the rabbit's foot originated. You know how rabbit's foot is supposed to be lucky, whatever. When Frederick was a little kid, 4, 5, 6 years old, something like that, he had a pet rabbit, which he had to keep hidden because his father absolutely forbade it. Then his father found out he had this rabbit, and so he made Frederick kill the rabbit, skin the rabbit, and cook and eat the rabbit. But Frederick kept one of the rabbit's feet, which he carried around in his pocket or whatever they had in those days. I don't know if they had pockets back then, but
a purse.
Yeah, whatever. Just so he would remember his rabbit.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't very lucky for the rabbit.
All right.
But then we go from we visit the Silo Heights out in that area, which is mm-hmm. where one of the biggest battles took place. By this time, the German defenders were so incredibly outnumbered by the Red Army, and the Red Army just finally swept across the Oder River and right into Berlin from there. So we're going to be there at the Oder Bridgehead,
uh-huh.
and then we're going to be around Berlin, and we will stand right where the great Ronald Reagan stood when he said, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall."
Yeah.
There's museums, places to see around Berlin. Then we're going west, and the only Type 7C submarine left in the world is U-995, which was the boat of my best friend in Germany, Hans-Georg Hess, who became a doctor of law. He was one of the last guys to receive a Knight's Cross. And so we'll visit that submarine, and there's a Navy memorial there, too. We will go through the Navy memorial. There's also one of the propellers from the cruiser, Prince Eugene, because after the war was over, it was surrendered to the Allies, and they used it in the Bikini Atoll bomb test. And they thought it sank. Actually, it just capsized and was floating around the Pacific or the Indian Ocean and wound up grounding itself on the Keeling Cocos Islands many, many years after the war. And apparently it finally cooled down enough radiation-wise to where they could take the prop off it, and it's back there. We also go through the German U-boat memorial, which is a big curving wall, which is where the sculptor got the idea for the Vietnam Memorial Wall in D.C. They've got bronze plaques there with every submarine that was sunk.
Every
and
one.
The name,
that's
yeah,
a hell
everyone,
of a lot
and
of
there
boats.
Was a bunch of them. They lost a lot of submarines. And
Tell our listeners how many. Hold on. Our listeners how many German young men went to sea and didn't come back in the U-boat service.
Yeah. It boils down to about six guys out of seven did not come back. As a comparison, on the American side, the American submarine sailors had the biggest attrition rate of any American forces. One guy out of seven got killed, and that's a horrible, horrible rate. On the German side, though, one guy out of seven came home. Just about 30,000 out of about 39,000 didn't come home. And these were, okay, fine, and these were just kids. I'm sitting here now at my my ripe old age of 80 years old. I can look on those guys as kids. But when I joined, I was a kid, mm-hmm. too. I was 18 years old when I went into the Air Force.
Right.
And, you know, and when you think about guys like Hans-Georg Hess, 4 months after his 21st birthday, they gave him command of a combat submarine. And you think, holy smoke, the guy's 21-year-old kid commanding a submarine. But yet when, which was young, of course, but I look back when I was 19 years old, I was commanding a six-man team loading hydrogen bombs onto heavy bombers. So when you get older, you don't do those things. These guys were not the raging
19.
Nazis that,
did
that
you
we
say
were
you
told.
Were 19?
Well, I was 18 when I joined, but I was 19 when I started loading thermonuclears.
At 19?
Yeah.
I was trying to remember what I was doing when I was 19. I was not loading nuclear bombs when I was 19. That's for damn sure.
okay. Okay, I was close to 20. Let's see, I was 18 when I got out of tech school. It was 1 month of boot camp and then 6 months of intensive training, because I joined right after my 18th birthday. And so 7 months down the road, then I got misassigned to Chanute Air Force Base, and there were five of us Spec Webb's guys got there and went into the headquarters squadron. And, okay, we're here to report in. Where's the A&E squadron? The what? A&E, you know, armament and electronics. Well, we ain't got one of them here. Okay, where are the bombers? We ain't got no bombers. So where's the flight line? We ain't got no flight line. So we asked, what do you guys do here? Oh, we teach people to bake and to cook and to fix Jeeps. So I wound up being a lifeguard at the base swimming pool for the rest of the summer.
Oh, really? That's like the fox in the hen house.
Yes, it certainly was. Plus, we also had a great schedule. There were two shifts. You work one day, the next day you have off. You work one day, the next day you have off. And then on the weekends, you work Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and the following week you have Saturday, Sunday, Monday off. And this was at Chanute Air Base, 100 miles south of Chicago, and that was my hometown. So I'd get off work at 10 o'clock at night out of the pool and drive all the way home and party until morning, then go around, visit all my buddies, and then party that night.
The pool was open until
10? The base.
The pool was open until 10 at night?
Right. Yeah, we had lights.
Unless we
were in, for some reason.
A likely story, Harry. Yes,
yeah, if we didn't want to work late, we would just do a test on the acidic content or whatever. We'd say, oh, nope. Too much acid in the pool, close the pool, and then we'd all go party. But at the end of the year, when I turned 19, and yeah, that's right, I turned 19 when I was there, and then they closed the pool for the winter, and they wanted me to put white lines on football fields, and I says, hey, wait a minute, I'm here to kill commies. I got to kill commies. So they sent me to a SAC base when I was I was 19.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. Hold on. It's a good place to pause.
I'm still waiting for our Friday to come up with our.
Well, we got the. At least he got the names up, but Friday is not there yet. I've written to him. He'll get it.
I don't. Okay. I don't see my name there yet.
Oh, everybody else does. Yeah. You got to refresh the deal.
Oh, there I am, Harry Cooper. I remember him.
It's probably the same one that is working with shark hunters, I would bet.
Yep, that's probably the same guy.
All right. We have, look at the 1, 2, 3, 4. All right, waking. The first, Harry Cooper, then the title of the program, Walking History, and looking at some historic World War II photographs. I thought that up myself.
Doggone,
Harry
clever.
Doesn't like to give me titles. Now, the first link is just lost bunkers in Germany. The second link is, I wrote these myself, so if you don't like them, you can blame me. It says a very strange man who has incredible historic information but doesn't want to talk.
Yeah.
Is that okay? Did I do right?
Oh, that's good.
It's
you
a truth.
Nice. You left out the word flake and coward, but that's okay.
I've got boundaries. And the third one is very special underground bunker tunnels. And then the fourth one is the one that Jeff did. The astonishing Owl Mountain project called The Giant. Photos. Don't look. Don't cheat. Don't go. We're going to do this one at a time.
Okay.
First up is Lost Bunkers in Germany. We'll do that in just a couple of minutes. With Admiral Cooper, stand by. Okay, and we're back. These coronavirus stories keep coming in. I'm putting them up shortly. The statistics are extraordinary. Spain's coronavirus death toll has already passed 1,000 people. Now, I know a lot of you will say, well, they kill that many in the highways in Spain every year. Well, they do. They kill more than
that. Gun battles and gunfire in Chicago, too.
That's right. That's right. But that's not the point. We're at the very beginning of an enormous upswelling curve. They're going to be the numbers are going to be in the tens of thousands in another week or two. It's going to be that bizarre. Italy, the military is involved all over the place. They're expecting a huge tsunami of new cases there.
Well, yeah, in Italy,
the tsunami is going to come here. Do you know, Harry, we don't even have the Q-tips to take cultures, swabs on the back of people's throats now and sinus. We can't test them. We don't even have test kits enough. Now we don't have the damn Q-tips. Sorry, they're a little longer than normal. Yes, okay. They got a little stick on them. They're about 10 inches long. We don't have any. Where does the buck stop? What would Harry Truman say? I despise the man. He would say the buck stops here. Somebody's got to take responsibility here. Sorry, that's the way it is. Somebody has to take responsibility. Now, we know that King Kushner was telling Donald for weeks, don't worry about it, Donald. It's a political issue. The Democrats are going to use it to try to smear you. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. I don't know if that's true, but I've read that. It may be true. Donald allegedly then became very unhappy with Jerry. And now Jerry has stepped outside of Donald Trump's control and authority because he's a volunteer. And in addition to Trump's task force on coronavirus, top doctors and so forth, Jerry has set up his own task force, a rival task force. This guy is completely out of control, Kushner. Trump put him in charge of the border wall, put him in charge of peace in the Middle East, put him in charge of negotiations with China, etc. And now Jerry, not put in charge of the coronavirus task force, has set up his own task force. This guy is, look, he's got far too much influence over the president, always have. We know, everybody knows, that's the worst-kept secret in the world. All right, let's go back. We got a lot of great pictures to look at.
Maybe
let's
if
go
we're
back
lucky,
to,
he will upset Hillary Clinton.
Who
you
will
know
upset
what happens
Hillary?
When you upset Hillary.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. All right, lost bunkers in Germany under Harry Cooper. Now, don't look ahead. I worked hard on the Owl Mountain thing. All right. Lost.
I haven't looked at Owl Mountain. However, right. I have looked at this, lost bunkers in Germany. That's not in Germany. This is in South America. Oops.
You weren't supposed to show those.
Why?
This is top secret stuff.
I know it. This is stuff that...
All right, well, we're not going to name the geographical region with any great specificity where these are.
Absolutely correct. It's somewhere in Argentina. Don't cry
right,
for me,
right.
Argentina.
Click on the thumbnails. Click on the first one, and X1 it's called. How's that for originality?
Hey,
it's
nobody
your fault.
Ever called me dumb and didn't mean it.
That's right. All right, so tell us about X1 there.
Okay, when we were down there, myself and Roger Mick and Vic Hirschfeld, Hirschfeld. Anyhow, we were shown these grottos that looked like you might be able to put a little religious icon in there. And these were all man-made. There were six of them in a row of about 50 feet apart, if I remember correctly. One of them was destroyed because a tree happened to fall on it. But this was in an area where, with a heavy Third Reich presence down there in Argentina,
It's also in an area where there were a lot of rocks.
Yeah, right. A lot of rocks.
See how profound an historian I am? I don't miss anything.
Yeah. Boy, oh, boy. So these are... We don't know. We haven't figured it out yet. But we're going back again in November. Roger, I know you're listening, so keep your passport current. It's Roger Mick. He sent me an email just before the show. He was with us there.
For all the great photographs, too. Yeah.
We wondered why Roger was having trouble walking so much. We thought it was just because he was kind of an old fart, but then he's younger than me by a bunch. And it turns out here he had, let's see, I'm looking at his email here. He had pneumonia and a partially collapsed left lung.
At all?
Yeah.
You gave me the same picture for number one and number two.
I'm sorry, what?
You gave me the same picture for number one and number two. And number three and number four.
They all look pretty
much
alike.
And you load hydrogen bombs?
Hanging around there too much? No, these are different guys and different shots of them. They're about 50 feet apart. You look at the surrounding grass and stuff. It's not the same.
No, they're the same pictures, number one and number two. Look at the rock placement.
Okay, if you say so.
You can't. No, it is.
Okay.
It is. But send the rest. Send the correct ones later, and we'll fix it. It's not a problem.
Okay.
Number one and number two are identical. Number three and number four are identical.
Okay.
And it looks like number. Hold on.
Number five. I think that's the one that the tree fell on. I'm not sure. They're all pretty overgrown.
Number seven and number eight are the same, I think.
If you say so.
Well, let me look at the guy's hands. Hold on. His hands are there, number seven, and his hands are, they're different pictures, but it's the same thing. They are different. All right.
Same place, but different shots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Number nine is, I guess that's the same one, too, was knocked over, huh?
Okay. Yeah, that's the one with the tree on it, I guess. I'm trying to remember who that is. It's not Vic, and it's not Roger Mick, so might have been, and it wasn't Martin. I don't know.
When were these, did you discover these most recently on your last trip down there?
We saw them on the last trip, yes, last November. That's the first we had seen of them. The first I think anybody had seen of them in any length of time because they were so incredibly overgrown.
Did you have to hack them out and clean them out so you could see what they were?
Somebody else did, yeah. Somebody hacked them out for us.
It looks like there's maybe something behind that back wall of rocks in there. Who knows? It looked like somebody could be interred back in there. I don't know.
Oh, my goodness. Well, next time I guess I better bring my entrenching tool.
But there's
we're going back
no, hold
November.
On. I stand corrected. Actually, I sit corrected. Because X3 is another one of these little grotto things. Are they all freestanding like that?
Yes. Yeah, they're all freestanding.
Okay.
A little bit different shapes on them, but they're all about 6 foot high, roughly, and all have little indents in them like they would put a religious figure in there.
Interesting. They're not burial crypts. They're something else. Wonder why they would be built.
My guess is some kind of a shrine. That's just my guess. It's nothing else. Just a guess. And we're going back in November. If any of your listeners want information, send me an email at sharkhunters@sharkhunters.com.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll let you know what's going on.
That would be the fabulous trip to Germany. This trip back to South America, if you get to go, and I will hope you do, and if you don't, we'll just put it off a little longer. But this looks to me like really amazing. All right, let's go to picture number 10.
Number 10. Aha. That's the entrance to a tunnel complex that we're told was primarily for a fuel storage tank, but why would anybody put a fuel storage tank underground? I never heard of a fuel storage tank underground like that.
If you look carefully, to the bottom left of the picture, number 10, is an obvious old piece of iron that was used to, you can see the inset was covering that bunker entrance.
Yep. And there was dirt and grass on top of it.
Yeah.
And now there's a fellow that, it was Roger Mick who found this guy's name, who claimed he was at this particular area about a year ago, and he found an entrance to a whole big tunnel complex under there. This is in Argentina. So I couldn't raise him on the phone. I never got an answer, so I sent a letter to him, and the letter did not come back here. So obviously he got the letter. He received the letter, just didn't want to answer it. But he lives about 200, 250 miles away from me. And within the next month or so, I'm going to go knock on his door, unless we can't travel because of the coronavirus.
The other problem is what's happening in Argentina. There's a complete lockdown over the whole country now.
Oh, is there really? I was under the impression they weren't hit so hard.
No, Fernandez locked it all down.
I'll be darned. Well,
won't be the first time you've been darned.
I got a feeling most of this virus scare is going to be over and done with beginning of May. I just think so.
Hope you're right.
I hope so, too.
SARS kind of disappeared quickly, and it came back the next year a little bit, but this is SARS 2.0.
Well, I'm looking at Wuhan, China. It got started, it peaked, and it dropped off, and now it's almost gone. If I remember correctly, they said that there have been no new cases there in Wuhan, China for about 2 weeks now.
In Wuhan. No, not two weeks, several days. But we don't trust the communist Chinese. Who knows
what's going
on? You mean
they lie? Well, it's a good thing we got honest politicians here like Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and Adam Schiff. They'd never lie to us.
Well, listen, the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Senator Burr, and Senator Feinstein from California, Feinstein, both now have obviously been caught using insider information to dump stocks before the coronavirus panic set in.
Yeah, there's four of them that are being targeted. We see it all over TV now. Well, if they broke the law, then they got to get jailed.
And they got to get their asses thrown out first. Yeah.
Well, of course, you get thrown out. Martha Stewart did some trading like that, but her problem was she lied to the FBI. They take a dim view of people lying to them, I guess.
Yeah.
Anybody.
So you got two senators now who are clear. Apparently, the story is we're using inside information to dump stocks. $1.5 million worth, one of them, Senator Burr, I think.
But yeah,
they're all crooks.
Heavy bucks, a lot of money.
They're all crooks. We know that. They're all crooks. Argentina locked down by President Fernandez. I think it is Fernandez. How do you spell Fernandez? D-E-Z. I got it.
Okay, I'll take it. You're looking something up.
I am. President Fernandez. Okay, here it is. President Fernandez orders nationwide lockdown of all of Argentina. 10-day coronavirus lockdown likely. That was 5 days ago. And did it yesterday. Nationwide lockdown in bid to contain the virus. Ain't going to work. President Alberto Fernandez on Thursday, which unless I'm mistaken was yesterday, ordered a preventive and compulsory lockdown of Argentina's population to stop the spread of the coronavirus epidemic. The mandatory quarantine period announced by the president from the Olivos presidential residence in a televised speech begins tonight. That's last night. Runs until March 31st. One of the strictest measures taken by any Latin American nation, blah, 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 which really, really is not good news for me.
Yeah, they've got a big population down there. So if they're, you know, if this thing is going to get loose down there, they got to contain it. They got a very large population. Buenos Aires is a huge city.
Right.
Mar del Plata is very, very large. So I guess they're taking care of their people.
All right. Let's see. What's next? Okay, those pictures, let's retire that group and go on to the second group, which is a strange man who literally, and I don't, Harry knows him, but
yep.
I know a lot about this story. This guy is sitting on a mountain of priceless World War II era and after World War II information, hundreds of photographs, because he grew up literally at the top level. And he won't talk. He's afraid they're going to get him and all that.
Yeah.
And Harry, through a benefactor we won't name, was able to go and fly and see this guy 2 weeks ago. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, I flew to the Southwest. I've known this fellow for several years because he's close friends with good friends of mine down there that run a beautiful little inn, bed and breakfast, whatever, an inn. And when I was there the last time, he clammed up. He got nervous, got panicky. So this time he swore by all that was holy he would talk freely and...
I'll just bet that's why the benefactor helped you make that trip.
I wouldn't be surprised. And the benefactor was a great help. and I still wound up $1,600 of my own money on top of it. It was more than I had anticipated. But still...
well, we tried.
The benefactor was super. And we got down there, and I did get confirmation of a few things that we had only... been hinted at before. So we go along with his father. Well, he was born 1941 in Berlin. His father was very high up in the military. His mother was good friends with Eva Braun and also with Magda Goebbels. But Magda and Eva Braun were not buddies since they knew that Hitler was banging Magda Goebbels, and at least one of the children, Holdeen, was fathered by Hitler. And even Goebbels put that in his diary that he knew Hitler was banging his wife, but what could he do about it? So when the war ended, and there was total chaos, this guy, we'll call him Michael, his father took off, disappeared, I don't know. I think his father was married to somebody else, and his mother was a friend. But anyhow, his mother took him. They went to a coffee plantation they had in Bolivia, and he grew up there. And the guy in photo one, he was the manager, overseer, or whatever, Fritz Wiedemann. That was Hitler's commanding officer in World War One. And Wiedemann had written in Hitler's file that he was not he lacked leadership qualities, which Wiedemann had to walk back after Hitler came to power. But if you Google Wiedemann, it says that after the war was over, he returned to farming. But I never found any place that said he returned to farming in South America. And according to this guy, Michael, Wiedemann, who was apparently a pretty big guy, had a sloth, a pet sloth hanging on him all the time, and quite frequently a pet monkey on the other shoulder. And according to Michael, Wiedemann would tell him, "You're never going to leave this plantation alive." And so Michael was scared stiff of this guy. And one time when Michael was, I guess in his late teens, he fell off his horse, bonged his head, was knocked out, broke broke his arm, and when he came to, the doctor setting his arm was Josef Mengele. And Mengele,
all right, now you're breaking up so badly. Let me recap that.
Okay.
Michael, we'll call him, was riding a horse on this coffee plantation and fell off, broke his arm, and knocked himself out. When he came to, his arm was being tended to and set by a doctor. And the doctor just happened to be named Mengele.
Josef Mengele.
Yeah.
So anyhow, this guy Fritz Wiedemann.
We got it. Hold on.
Yep.
Let me see. All right, we got 2 minutes. I'll try and get... Your phone is making the weirdest noises I've ever heard. I'm serious. I've never heard noises like this.
I'll change
beep,
to a different unit.
Beep, 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 beep.
It must be the NSA trying to block
us.
Oh,
yeah, could be. Could be easily. We'll get there. We got just a minute anyway. We'll call you
all
back
right,
again.
I'll change handsets. Let's see. How does it sound on this one now? Is it the same?
No, I don't hear any noise yet. Go ahead. No problem. All right.
Okay.
So the man with all this information, and believe me, from what I know about it, and the benefactor is a very close friend of mine, this man has one of the most important books, historical books, a look back at all the major players after the war. Let's put it that way. And it will flesh out the truth of the fact that the American government made a deal with the German government that tens upon tens of thousands, maybe more, Germans would be allowed to go to South America and live their lives out, unbothered, in an unfettered lifestyle, in exchange for German rocket scientists, German medical science, all the advancements that the Germans had achieved. That was the trade-off, and that's how it worked. But this guy has it all. How many photos were you able to see? Did he show you any during the trip?
No, the only photo we have is the one which is the third one, the young guy, the black and white. We call it Y3. That was him on my favorite street in Buenos Aires on Calle Florida,
right,
which is a walking street. You cannot drive cars on it. And all the, at night, there's tango dancers out there. There's people doing caricatures you can buy. There's people selling all sorts of stuff out there. And our hotel literally is within a stone's throw of where he's standing. Literally, within a stone's throw.
Right.
And it's fantastic. We go out there in the evening, in the afternoon. There's people playing saxophones, there's people playing guitars and singing, and all up and down that street. It runs about 4 blocks in one direction from my hotel and 8 blocks in the other direction.
Huh.
And that's it. And it's a great place. So when people come with us on our tour to Argentina, they'll be standing right where this guy is standing. And he, go back to Y2 picture, that's Princess Stephanie von Hohenlohe, I think it is. She was a Jewish commoner. She married a prince. So she became a princess, but according to her son in later years, she used her feminine wiles to get whatever she wanted from men. So you fill in the blanks. She turned out to be Fritz Wiedemann's girlfriend, and she was on the coffee plantation where Michael grew up every so often.
I got it. Okay. Very good. She has an Adam's apple, too. All right. We'll be right back with Admiral Cooper. Hold on, lots ahead.